This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The decision of the junta to close the borders of Niger against Nigeria is a mere grandstanding to impress the people of Niger. It is rather a poor show of strength that is most likely to further hurt the people of Niger.
That's Frank Taitai, a human rights lawyer and political analyst on Niger's coup leaders. Details coming up. Also, the second-ranking U.S. diplomat met Niger's military leaders but reported no headway. And Senegal's justice minister says opposition leader Ousmane Sonko remains ineligible for next year's election. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The second-ranking U.S. diplomat met Niger's military leaders yesterday to press them to reverse their coup, but reported no headway a day after an ultimatum from the West African bloc ECOWAS was ignored. Victoria Nuland, acting Deputy Secretary of State, said she met for more than 2 hours with military chiefs who ousted democratically elected President Mohamed Bazoum on July 26th. Nuland's trip, conducted in secrecy until she left, came after the expiration of a deadline set by ECOWAS to reinstate Bazoum by midnight on Sunday or risk military intervention. The French news agency AFP says Nuland described her talks as extremely frank and at times quite difficult. She said she offered the coup leaders a number of options to end the crisis and restore ties with the United States, which, like other Western nations, has suspended aid. Nuland said she met Brigadier General Moussa Salul Baramu, who has been named the new military chief of staff and who has worked closely in the past with the United States. Nuland said she warned Niger against following neighboring Mali in bringing in mercenaries from Russia's Wagner group, who she said are at risk to the sovereignty of countries who invite the group. ECOWAS is reconvening for its own diplomatic push on the crisis with a summit Thursday in the Nigerian capital, Abuja. Washington is closely watching Niger's coup leaders after they chose not to meet a Sunday deadline to return the elected president to power and after regional powers failed to act on their threat of military action. Meanwhile, the U.S. has paused aid to the impoverished West African nation. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Washington on what's next for Niger.
In Niger's capital, Niamey, supporters of Niger's military coup were defiant, despite warnings from regional leaders and the West, as junta leaders continue to hold the president captive more than a week after they seized power. Junta spokesman Colonel Major Amadou Abdourahmane.
Le Conseil national pour la sauvegarde de la patrie met en garde.
The National Council for the Safeguard of the Country warns ECOWAS and the foreign powers against all interference in the internal affairs of Niger, as well as the disastrous consequences of this military adventure on the security of our sub-region, its stability, and the unity of our community, he says. To symbolize their seriousness, protesters in Niamey on Sunday slaughtered a rooster painted with the tricolor of former colonizer France. Sunday's deadline to return President Mohamed Bazoum to power came and went. From captivity, he managed to dictate an editorial to the Washington Post, in which he said the coup, led by the head of his presidential guard, has no justification whatsoever. The Economic Community of West African States, or ECOWAS, threatened to use force if Bazoum was not released. The body will now hold an emergency summit Thursday. Niger is a key U.S. security partner in the unstable Sahel region. A Monday Pentagon official said there was no change to the force posture of the hundreds of U.S. troops there, and no plans to evacuate them. Niger, one of the world's poorest countries, has the highest fertility rate in Africa and depends heavily on foreign aid. On Monday, the State Department discussed its decision to cut aid. State Department spokesman Matthew Miller.
It's a significant amount. I don't have a number because it's a pause, and it's a pause that we would hope would be reversed if the junta leaders would step aside and restore constitutional order tomorrow. That pause would be the pause would go away and security assistance would be reinstated. But as we've made clear, hundreds of millions of dollars are at stake.
But the junta leaders have some support, analysts say. as their counterparts in nearby Burkina Faso, Mali, and Guinea have come out on their side and held meetings with the Niamey Group. Alex Fiennes has studied the continent for decades as head of the Africa program at think tank Chatham House. He spoke to VOA via Zoom.
They're afraid of a regional economic community intervening and restoring democracy, and that's not what they stand for. I guess it shows how fearful they are that a values-based intervention that is a lot about preserving and supporting democratic process and accountable government is something that they don't welcome.
So with this testy region bristling with anti-Western vibes, what can the wider world do?
Any action by international partners, be they France or the United States, could be misinterpreted, misconstrued. So I think it is prudent of the Pentagon just to keep their people in place and kind of watch out as the mediation politics and possibly military intervention planning continues.
Meanwhile, in Niamey, residents have been stockpiling food and supplies for what could be a tense week ahead. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
Terrorist groups such as Akim and the Islamic State use the vast, in part very mountainous areas of Fezzani in southern Libya as a safe haven where they can operate almost completely unchallenged with a logistics depot, training, deployment and evasion area. Wolfgang Pochtai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, explains to VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shanawi how these terrorist groups could exploit the fragile situation on the Niger and Libyan borders in expanding their activities.
First, I would like to mention the current American and French deployment of troops and of intelligence assets in Niger. The United States operates a logistic and a training base in Niamey, capital, and a drone base in Agadez in the north. This is the central element for American surveillance in the fight against terrorism in the whole Sahel region. From this base in Agadez, most of the American surveillance and combat sorties over Libya and also over the other countries in the region are flown. If the situation constitutes a coup from an official American point of view, the Americans would need to withdraw from Mali. This would mean that in order to maintain a drone base in the Sahara region, they could eventually move the base to Chad. But the drone base in N'Djamena, in the capital of Chad, for example, is already quite far away from the terrorist hotspots in Mali and Burkina Faso. An example, a typical mission of an MQ-9 Reaper drone is about 1,800 kilometers away from its home base. The distance from N'Djamena to Bamako in Mali is 2,500 kilometers. With regard to the French, fortunately, their nuclear industry is not as dependent on the uranium from Niger as it was just a couple of years ago, but they still maintain a significant military presence in Niger, more than 1,500 troops. They have a main base in Niamey, and they conduct long-range and commando operations from northern Niger from Madama. In this base, either a paratrooper company or a company from the French Foreign Legion is permanently deployed, and they are providing surveillance and ambushes on smuggling and terrorist groups in northern Niger, in the area of the Salvador Pass towards Libya, if the Americans and the French will withdraw. This gives the terrorist organizations much more room to maneuver throughout the region, not only in Libya, throughout the region. An engagement of the Russian Wagner Group by the military regime is likely, but I'm sure they won't be able to make up for the Western support.
Following the withdrawal of the French-led Takuba forces from Mali in August of 2022 and the subsequent withdrawal of French forces from Burkina Faso in 2023, France shifted its forces to Niger. Additionally, the planned withdrawal of the UN Stabilization Force from Mali by the end of 2023 puts an end to the decade-long presence of a 17,000-strong mission. How could these withdrawals and the anti-Western sentiment in Niger following the military coup risk jeopardize hard-won gains in fight against jihadist insurgency in the region?
This is a very significant development. The West and especially the European Union attempted a comprehensive approach to keep Niger stable and to fight terrorism. And Niger is more or less the last bastion in this region for this approach. This doesn't mean only military support, but also significant economic and development aid. Within an integrated approach, the European Union provided support to peace building, to conflict prevention, to dialogue, and as development coordination in parallel with humanitarian assistance, Niger is one of the poorest countries on the globe. The European Union alone allocated $552 million to improve governance, education, and sustainable growth in Niger between 2021 and 24. In addition to what was provided by the member states, like Germany, which provided $132 million. And the just recently launched European Union military partnership mission in Niger was a long-term effort to enhance the military capacity and the democratization of Nigerian armed forces. All this will now be probably replaced by a less sophisticated kinetic-only approach, relying on Wagner mercenaries and Russian attack helicopters. We can see in Mali how inefficient this is.
That was Wolfgang Porstei, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, speaking with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi. You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. UN agencies warn health conditions are deteriorating across Sudan and neighboring countries as growing numbers of people flee escalating fighting between the Sudanese armed forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Before the conflict erupted on April 15th, 4.5 million Sudanese already were displaced, more than 3.7 million as displaced people inside Sudan, and another 800,000 as refugees in Chad, South Sudan, Egypt, and Ethiopia. Since the rival generals went to war, the UN Refugee Agency reports nearly an equal number, more than 4 million people, have become newly displaced. It says it is deeply worried about the health conditions in refugee and IDP camps inside Sudan, as well as among those arriving in neighboring countries. UNHCR spokesman William Spindler calls the situation inside Sudan untenable, with needs far outweighing available resources. For example, he notes White Nile State lacks essential medicines and is short of staff to care for the ill. He says this is severely hampering health and nutrition services for more than 144,000 newly displaced refugees in all 10 refugee camps in the region.
As many families have been on the move for weeks with very little food and medicine, rising malnutrition rates, disease outbreaks, and related deaths continue to be observed. In addition, severe cholera and malaria are expected in the coming months due to flooding from the continuing rains and inadequate sanitation facilities.
The UNHCR reports there have been more than 300 deaths, mainly among children under 5 years, due to measles and malnutrition between May 15th and July 17th. It warns health services are being stretched thin for lack of funds, supplies, and chronic shortages in health staff. Now, in its fourth month of conflict, the World Health Organization reports Sudan's insecurity, as well as limited access to medicines, medical supplies, electricity, and water, pose a challenge to the delivery of health care. WHO spokesman Christian Lindemeyer says attacks on health facilities are increasing, preventing the sick and wounded from getting needed care. Between April 15th and July 31st, he says WHO has verified 53 attacks on healthcare, causing 11 deaths and 38 injuries.
Attacks on healthcare are a gross violation of international humanitarian law and the right to health. They must stop. Humanitarian workers need assurances of safety and security in order to continue delivering critical humanitarian and health response.
The Federal Ministry of Health reports 12,200 people have been injured and 1,205 killed since April 15th, figures UN agencies believe are greatly underestimated. UNHCR and WHO warn the lives of many people are hanging by a thread. They are appealing for more donor support to save the lives that will be lost if that help is not forthcoming. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Intelligence assessments say Sudan's Rapid Support Forces, RSF paramilitary, has the resources and skill to sustain its war against the Sudanese army for years to come. Darren Taylor reports.
The conflict's been the most intense in the capital, Khartoum, and in the western Darfur region. 20 years ago, many current Rapid Support Force fighters, including leader Mohamed Hemeti Dagalo, were members of Arab militias known as the Janjaweed, which terrorized Darfur. Their task, says former United States intelligence analyst Cameron Hudson, was to wipe out Sudanese of African ethnicity for then ruler Omar al-Bashir.
They became responsible for what we would consider to be the most kind of gruesome aspects of the killing in Darfur. Because they were on the ground, because they were coming in on horseback and camelback, they were carrying out the rapes. They were carrying out the person-to-person killing, the destroying of villages and of water points, the destruction of livestock, the looting, all of these kind of very personal crimes.
Hudson was speaking during a recent Atlantic Council webinar. The International Criminal Court indicted al-Bashir and others for genocide in Darfur, but they haven't been prosecuted. Al-Bashir was overthrown in 2019 and remains in the custody of the Sudanese army. Hudson says with so many conflicts unresolved in Sudan, it's fertile ground for the present fighting to expand into a full-blown civil war and possibly a regional war.
As this fighting has gone on, we have seen new factions emerge. Arab tribes from Darfur, we're seeing opposition groups from the Nuba Mountains begin to take opportunities available to them to strike. This is a conflict that affects every corner of the country. It affects every tribe, group, ethnicity, socioeconomic class of the country, and every major city throughout the country. It is really a far more devastating and comprehensive conflict than anything that we've really witnessed in Sudan's modern history.
The RSF fought as mercenaries in Libya and Yemen, building a cash reserve that allowed it to go on mass recruitment drives. Hudson says it's getting the upper hand in Khartoum because regular reinforcements are coming in from Darfur.
It's really, I think, the appeal of the rapid support forces right now and its leader, General Dagalo Hameti. This idea that for so long these peripheral areas have been marginalized and that they are going to bring this violence that has always plagued the peripheral communities, they're going to bring it to the capital, they're going to bring it to the elites of the country, and they are going to make them feel some measure of what these other communities have been feeling for decades now.
VOA tried repeatedly to get reaction from the RSF to Hudson's comments, but their spokesman never responded. Several attempts by Saudi Arabia, the United States, the African Union, and other parties to negotiate lasting ceasefires in Sudan have failed, and talks have been stalled for weeks. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Heavily armed illegal miners are wreaking havoc in South Africa, killing each other and terrorizing communities. Their underground blasting in abandoned gold mines is damaging houses and fueling anger from residents. Security cluster ministers have met with President Cyril Ramaphosa, seeking the deployment of the army to confront the gold panners head on. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
Last week, the illegal mining gangs had a fierce gun battle in Johannesburg's Rivalry suburb. When the smoke cleared, five bullet-riddled bodies of dead panners were picked up. This is just but one of the many battles involving these miners, who have invaded dozens of old gold mines scattered around Johannesburg. Often, intruders in their self-claimed territories are shot execution style. Last month, a gas leak from nitrogen gas they were using to separate the gold from soil in Boksburg, east of Johannesburg, killed 17 people, including children and women. A gang of these illegal miners last year raped 8 women who were part of a crew shooting a movie in Krugersdorp, west of Johannesburg. Police attempts to raid and arrest these gold panners have sometimes been met with gunfire. Motapelo Khape, a member of the Community Policing Forum in Riverlea, told a group of journalists that the backlees of these illegal miners have turned their suburb into a war zone.
They just shoot on top. They shoot. 5:30, we were inside our shacks. We locked our gate with our children. They shoot. They go up. You can even, while you are here on that side, you can even hear they are still busy shooting. They shoot, and whenever they come out, they even alert. You can hear by the gunshot that they are still shooting. They are coming out.
Police Minister Bekicele, who has visited the affected areas several times, told community members that they will now take whatever measures possible to end the illegal mining crisis, including going after the kingpins. A recent raid nabbed close to 200 gold panners, mostly undocumented migrants.
They get that gold and they sell it to the top guys. The top guys, they live in Sentin and they live in Dubai.
Andres Moyashe from the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy assured residents that illegal gold panning could be a thing of the past before the end of the year.
The process to close all holes will happen. And definitely by the mid-end of September, all shops will be closed permanently.
While authorities begged to find a lasting solution, residents in affected areas across the province will continue to sleep with one eye open. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Senegal's justice minister said yesterday that the president's fiercest political opponent, Ousmane Sonko, remains ineligible for next year's election and is not entitled to a retrial. According to the French news agency AFP, Ismaïla Madior Fall said a 2-year prison sentence issued in absentia in June still stands, despite Sonko's arrest on separate charges last month. According to Senegal's penal code, if defendants who are tried in absentia are arrested within a limited period, any conviction is automatically annulled unless they expressly agree to the sentence within 10 days. On July 28, he was arrested on a fresh set of allegations and has been in detention since then. His lawyers say that his arrest on the new allegations cancelled out his conviction in a high-profile moral corruption case because he had been tried in absentia. Sonko's conviction on June 1st in the case sparked fatal clashes that left at least 16 people dead. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Adrius Regas, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station Saturday.